Hello and welcome to another episode of I-80 Sports Basketball Talk. We're back. You got Kilroy, Mongo, Kevin, and Tommy.
What's up, everybody?
I think you froze again, Tommy.
You know what? Let's just roll with it.
Sure.
Sure. Why not?
Yeah.
Anyway, as you all know, we're back, and we're here to tell you about week four.
We're taking a look around the league, the good, the bad, the Charlotte Hornets, and everything in between. As we always like to do, we like to take a look at where everybody is. So while Tommy tries to figure out how to not be creepily looking at us like the Joker, we're going to have Kilroy start this thing off by doing a quick little rundown of the league standing, shall we?
We shall. We have the Atlantic. And then we have the Sentinel. No, I'm kidding.
a rundown of the divisions. I see what you did there. Cute.
All right. So in the Atlantic, we have the Boston Celtics at 10-3, Toronto Raptors at 7-7, Brooklyn Nets 6-7, Knicks 6-7, 76ers 6-7. That's a lot of 6-7s if you didn't get that. And the 76ers are the 7-6 and 6-7s.
He's trying to say that fast.
You got the Milwaukee Bucks at 10-2. The Cleveland Cavaliers at 8-4, the Indiana Pacers at 6-6, Chicago Bulls 6-7, and the Detroit Pistons are 3-11. On to the Southeast, we have the Atlanta Hawks are 8-4, Washington Wizards are surprising 7-6, Miami Heat are surprising 6-7, the Orlando Magic somehow have 4 wins with 9 losses, and the Charlotte Hornets sometimes play basketball when they're playing at 3-11. On to the Western Conference, we have currently in first place in all of West, the Northwest specifically as well, the Utah Jazz at 10-4, followed closely by the Portland Trailblazers at 9-4, Denver Nuggets 8-4, OKC Thunder 6-7, Minnesota Timberwolves are 5-8. On to the Pacific, we have the Phoenix Suns at 8-4. The LA Clippers 7-6, Sacramento Kings 5-6, Golden State Warriors 5-2, and the Lonely Lakers at 2-10.
That was 5-7 on the Warriors. Sorry, not 5-2. You put the two together.
Whatever.
5-7 Warriors, 2-10.
On to the Southwest, we have the Memphis Grizzlies at 9-4, the Dallas Mavericks at 7-5, New Orleans Pelicans 7-6. The San Antonio Spurs at 6-7, and the Houston Rockets at 2-11.
Go Spurs, go.
2-11. Oh, they're going to be the last team you say pretty much the entire year, aren't they?
Well, I mean, I think that's just the order.
They're not getting out of the basement of that division, though, so
yeah,
Southwest is always last. Houston's going to always be last.
Yeah.
They're also going to have a single-digit number at the start of their record for a very long
time. I mean, I can spice it up, and we can go from the Southwest to the Atlantic.
No, I like ending with the Rockets. So let me
do
know. Well, lets me know when I need to tune back in.
By the way,
I'm ready to talk.
Right. In the standings, it should be noted that there are exactly 7 teams at 6-7.
Whew.
I was going to say it seems like half the league is 6-7.
Not quite, but that's a lot. We got a real log jam in the middle of this thing.
The good news is the Knicks are 1.
That's true. So they're sitting somewhere between like 18th and 25th. Yes.
All right. On to our famous topic.
That may or may not exist because he's still the Joker.
Tommy, can you actually talk?
Why so serious?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Cool. He's frozen, but that's fine. He can do a tank talk with Tommy.
Worth the technology error just to set up that.
All right. Let's do this. Tank Talk with Tommy. All right, Tommy. Do one the moment. Stuff you do. Tell us about the... Oh, you're back in a different spot.
There.
All right, Tommy really going high tech to get this to happen. He literally went used the first 5 minutes of the show to go buy a new cell phone. So hopefully this is working.
No. I was using my laptop before.
Oh, okay. Well, that was clearly a mistake.
Whoops. Yeah. All right. So give me a second. I got to work with my notes on my laptop this time rather than on my phone. So I just got to pull them up.
It's okay.
Take your time.
Go ahead and talk about something else in the meantime.
So in this segment, Tommy tells us about the tanking teams. He's going to tell us the five teams that are bad. Yeah. And then he'll tell us funny stories about them in his Scottish accent. That part is definitely true.
My Scottish accent, oi.
Oh, I was really hoping he was just going to ignore me.
That was closer than I really thought was going to happen. I can't be too mad about that.
I don't think we all can be too mad. I mean, other than our Scottish viewership, which is maybe not.
I'd like to apologize initially. So, laddies, right now, via Tankathon, it would seem the first tanking team.
You're just a pirate now, by the way.
That drifted real quick. Weird. As a pirate would, that drifted ashore real quick.
That bit sucks. All right. So, per Tankathon, it looks like the team with the highest odds right now to get that first pick would be the Houston Rockets. No surprise there. But the biggest story in all this really is the Lakers being the Lakers and not being good at all, meaning the Pelicans can still, if they keep this up, the Pelicans could get their pick.
I mean, at this point, it looks like the Pelicans are guaranteed a top four. What, right? Four? Is it four or five?
How does right now, work? It shows them second.
Kevin, how's that work?
Four is the game we're playing for.
Oh, for the top pick?
Yeah. Four is the magic number here.
I thought three was the magic number.
That's Schoolhouse Rock.
I'm going to pull up the 2023 NBA draft lottery odds.
That's what I have pulled up.
No, not the odds. Just
the rules.
The rules, yeah. Anyway, continue on, Tommy, while Kevin looks that up.
Third are the almighty Charlotte Hornets, who, despite being having a strong win in the beginning of the season, have just fallen right apart.
Just a reminder, sorry, Tommy, to cut you off. They were 3-3 at one point. If it sounds like we've been saying the 3-blank Charlotte Hornets for a while, we have. That's an 8-game losing streak they're on.
If any team went on a nosedive, it was the Charlotte Hornets and quick.
Lakers are not too far behind on a 5-game losing streak.
Yeah. Can the Charlotte Hornets find their way out of this hole?
No, hopefully they'll trade Ball, though. Hmm.
And fourth, to no
one... MJ, Julius Randle, he's always wanted him.
So to no one's surprise, fourth is the Detroit Pistons. I think these guys are going to be regulars on this in this top five spot. They're not doing too much this season. And also to no one's surprise, another usual suspect in fifth place, the Orlando Magic. They might, by like I said last week, by merit of just getting better at games, they might sneak out of this top five. I still think they're going to be a top 10, pick overall.
I mean, they're on a 2-game win streak right now.
Yeah.
I mean, they should just not go on any away games. They're a win 6 on the road.
Yeah.
That Rockets Orlando crowd really helping out.
I want to mention our perennial teams, our flagship teams, rather. Utah Jazz are pretty clear of this whole conversation now, and I probably will take them off the whole flagship thing if they continue to win. San Antonio Spurs are sitting at a 10th pick. It's in the simulator here shows them as a play-in. I think that'll change. I think they've got a solid team. I think they're going to willingly lose. They're going to be an actual tank team. They're going to sit some players that otherwise are fine, make up some injuries like they have been doing in the past few games a week and a half ago.
Doctor's notes.
Doctor's notes, yes. Dr. Popovich says you have to take a game off. Yeah, again, look for them to really to get a little lower as the season goes by. I think they're going to try and make a push for at least Keldon Johnson to be an all-star. And after that, once the all-star weekend's in, see, watch them lose quite a few games.
Fair enough.
Yeah, they get that. They're for Tommy, you know, as a fan, but they're fortunate enough to get that rodeo road trip every year after voting's already over. So they're already in that we don't really care part of the season when it's real easy to drop 10, 12, 14 in a row real quick. So look for it's always rough on the road trip, but look for a really historically bad rodeo road trip.
Especially because I think they're going to angle for a trade before the deadline, a big one that'll probably send away Jakob Poeltl, maybe even some of the other veterans on the team.
Fair enough.
Other than that, I do see the New York Knicks look to be in the tank talk too. They're in ninth seed right now. Wink, wink. I'm just messing with you guys.
With the way they played today, they would be on the tank list in short order soon, unfortunately.
Yeah. They still won't get the top pick.
Never.
Nope. And with that, this concludes Tank Talk with Tommy.
Thank you. Very nice, Tommy. You know, the thing about tanking is that it's a lot like, it's kind of like, you know, the game of tanking is kind of like golf in that you can't really play defense. You can't go out and stop somebody from losing a game. But if you're later in, you know, the day one of a tournament and everyone's shooting one over, two over, you know, okay, I'm just playing the course. I just have to shoot par. And it's kind of the same way. And around the league this week, we had our first week where everyone was, you know, shooting poorly in the tanking game. We had the Pacers accidentally beating the Raptors. We had the Thunder accidentally beating the Knicks. The Magic were lucky enough to play the Suns, missing three starters. You know, you look around the league, everyone, the Spurs were able to get the Bucks. Everybody had what would normally be a quality win this week, but in Tankland, you know, it's an unfortunate win. And so there wasn't much movement in, you know, the team that really did the most moving was Charlotte, by virtue of losing multiple games this week. Some they should have won, some they shouldn't have, but the Hornets really are making this look easy right now, while everyone else seems to be finally starting to accidentally put together some wins. Because we know nobody's going 0-82. We know no one's going 82-0. So bravo to the Hornets for managing to do what seemingly no other team could do this week, which was, you know, avoid winning a game by accident.
What a world it would be if the Charlotte Hornets were the team that selected Victor Wembanyama.
Oh, baby. The NBA is ready to fold if they need to.
We'll have a Kobe happen.
You could literally just have another Kobe. It would be the exact same city. But we'll see. Long way to go. But thank you, Tommy. Good work as always.
On to our next segment.
The I-80 Sports Traffic Report, where you can find all your news and notes from the week.
They call it the Traffic Report. We call it the List.
The List!
It's where we give you a rundown of everything else going around the league we were interested enough by to say, that's worth a little talking time. And so we're going to run that down for you right now. What do you got, Kilroy?
So we're going to start off with our weekly subject of Brittany Griner, and it's not really like a positive thing ever, unfortunately, and maybe one day we'll get some positive news, but right now we got some not good news, actually. As though we did not think it could get worse, it keeps getting worse. Brittany Griner has been moved to a penal colony from a Russian prison to a penal colony. Experts are very worried about this because she's black and she's a woman and she's in Russia and she's American. They are not particularly fond of black people in Russia. And they're also not particularly fond of Americans in Russia. So they are actually worried for her life, which is not a good thing, obviously. On top of it, her lawyers did not know she was being moved and don't even know where she's being moved to. So like her location is also unknown. It takes, I think, 2 to 6 weeks or something till they get that information. And at that point, who knows what could have happened, and anything could have happened at that point. Her family also obviously would not know as well, because they get that information through her lawyers. So the situation just somehow keeps getting worse and worse. And I don't know what else to say other than I really hope that something positive can happen soon in this story.
I feel like we talk about this and nobody is listening. So let me make sure my words are hitting somebody in the face here. Let me make sure my audience is clear. You morons on Twitter, please listen up for a second. You social media trolls who are responding to this news with comments like, who cares? Why should we care? Things of that nature. First of all, for those of you out there who love this Twitter cliche of, well, she did the crime, she should do the time. Let's just think about that cliche for a minute, shall we? If you are out there saying that and you're not sending in a check to your local government every time you do 36 and a 35, if you're not sending a letter to the DMV saying, hey, please add points to my license every time you roll through a stop sign, you're absolutely full of it. We all know that that cliche is absolute BS. It's if you do the crime and you get caught, you do the time. So don't give me this holier than thou nonsense. And as far as this crime, which by Russian law is a crime, I'm not going to deny it, but why did it happen in the first place? It happened because she made a mental error because she was exhausted, because instead of taking the off season like an athlete should be entitled to, she has to travel halfway around the country every time or halfway around the world every time just to keep up with the financials of other athletes and particularly men in her field. So she didn't do a crime. She accidentally did something wrong because she could barely see straight as she was making her way around the world trying to keep up with her counterparts. So first of all, let's get that clear. Second of all, why should you care? Kilroy nailed it. This is a country that hates us. This is a country that once it is in their best interest to do so, they will mess with us however they can, whether it's financially, whether it's physically, whether it's with violence, whether it's politically, whatever they can do. They just don't do it right now because America's strong enough. But any chance they can to mock us, to lessen us, they're going to. And that's effectively what this is, because they are taking Brittany Griner and effectively playing three-card Monty with her life. The shell game, you know, for those of you who don't know what three-card Monty is, follow the Brittany Griner. Where are we going to hide her next? Not to make little of it, but that's what they are doing. They are saying, this is how little we think about Americans. We are going to make her the little ball under the shell and just make her a toy for us to brag about our power over you. So if you don't care a drop about athletes, about celebrities, about women, if you're misogynistic enough that, oh, she's a black woman, that's why she's getting the attention, which, you know, alone, see ya, bye. But if you don't care about her at all, you should care because of that. You should care because if you don't care now, you're going to care in a couple years when everything is three times more expensive because Russia has, you know, levied its political power. You're going to care in 3 years when there's talks of bombings and talks of bombs in the world, and you're sitting there with your little yike sign looking like a dumb Wile E. Coyote. Because I'll give you a hint. If you're not looking left and right and speaking up for your brothers and sisters now, when you need that advocate, nobody's going to be there to speak for you. So get off Twitter. Do something with your life and care for once about people. Thank you. Back to you guys.
So, there's not much else to add after that on the Brittany Griner situation. So let's move over to
a happier note.
Something we can talk about. All right.
Or the Lakers. I'll take the Lakers too. Something we can
we can be depressed about, rightfully.
I'll take that too.
We have happy news here.
All right, what do we got?
We have the Nets have named their head coach.
This is very good news. I love this.
The Nets did not. They made the right decision and did not hire Ime Udoka to be their next head coach.
Udoka. They
chose Jacques Vaughn.
Which I love this. This is the equivalent of the in case of emergency, you know how in case of emergency break glass, This is basically in case of emergency, bring back Jacques Vaughn. They just have him on retainer to settle things down when they need to, it seems. You know, he's been a regular in the organization before. He's a calming presence. They know him. They seemingly like him. Welcome back, buddy. It seems to be working so far because he seems to understand, just like Kevin Durant, and the world will fix itself.
Now, I also believe that he got a contract, too. It's not just an interim. It's through the 2024 season, I believe.
They removed the interim tag. I know that.
Kev, would you mind statsing that for us? How long
Which would also be, to my understanding, it's like it's just this year and then next year. Again, that might not be, it might just be just this year. I'm not quite sure.
I got that answer right now. Jacques Vaughn reportedly signed a new contract that extends through the 2023-2024 season.
Awesome. There we go.
Cool. And that's even better. Adding that stability, giving some answers to a team that has just been floating for a year and a half is brilliant. It's somebody they can trust. It's somebody who they know what they're getting. Is he going to win Coach of the Year anytime soon? Probably not, but do you really need that when the whole narrative a year ago was we don't even need a coach? No, you just need someone who they're going to respect as the figurehead of this team.
Sticking with the Nets, I did not put it on the list, but we might as well quick hit this. So Kyrie situation is still ongoing. He has like an 84-page list of things that he has to accomplish. Joseph Tsai has kind of come back on that a bit because he took a lot of heat, it seems, from this. And it seems like the Players Association is backing Kyrie, which is a little weird. There was a Black Israelites protest. I guess it was a protest. I don't know if you call it protest, but that were outside of the Barclays Center this past week during one of the Nets games.
That's
all I have for that. Anyone else want to talk about Kyrie and the?
By all means, somebody else can take this one. Kev, what do you got?
I think the NBA Players Association did this move reluctantly. I don't think that this. I think that it's kind of this one hand tied behind their back. Like they don't agree with anything that Kyrie said or promoted in the tweet. But because of the suspension that could be lengthened to indefinite status if Kyrie didn't meet all his objectives, I think from that perspective, they were required in their duties as the Players Association, and yes, I'm putting this in quotes intentionally, to do something about that, because I don't think they want to see another case that might be less obvious be affected by this kind of indefinite suspension. And I do believe that from what I had read during this timeline, the Nets had put out these moves thinking that Kyrie wouldn't do any of them. And Kyrie is surprising the Nets brass by actually trying to do these things. So that's all I have for this subject.
Yeah. I have one more thing to add before we switch to this other subject, which, I mean, this goes hand in hand with that. LeBron is disappointed me not the first time, but the most recent time. He came out, you know, he has his studio that he does his podcast with, and there was a whole big thing with Kanye in his beyond anti-Semitic problem he had in an interview with them that they chose not to air because it was such a problematic, hateful speech. So I would expect a little bit more from LeBron. So LeBron is saying, you know, essentially saying Kyrie should be back because he's apologized already and it's time to move on. The thing is this. Kyrie did not apologize until he was told, you have to apologize, because if you don't apologize, we're not letting you back in. So it's not really an apology so much as it is, hey, I want to play basketball again, and this is the only way I can. I don't think anyone here believes that Kyrie is at all
sincere
with his apology. I don't think I think he still thinks that he's not wrong. And I think that there's still a very large community of people who think that he's not wrong. And whether or not you believe the concept of what he's talking about, or not what he's talking about, what he's promoting, it's still insensitive to the community that the Jewish community that does exist, or that is existing, that isn't, that they're not running the media. They're not, this is all the same stuff that was, there's no nice way to say this is the same stuff that Hitler was saying. And obviously I'm exaggerating, you know, it's not to the same degree, but it's just, it's bad. You don't want to say this about any group. I don't know. I can't say anything because it's too close to home for me.
And I think that's, without getting too much into what it is, because again, I don't want to go down that path, mostly for your own comfort, but I think that's part of where the problem lies in this whole thing. And it's where you started to see a shift in tone on this whole thing, with a lot of people and a lot of players coming to the aid of Kyrie. If, and I'm going to use air quotes here too, Kev, if the authority side of this, the people who are actually telling Kyrie what he needs to do, said, first of all, you know, we need to have conversations here. We want you to actually meet with the other side and actually hear what they have to say. You can even explain your side. I mean, if it goes nowhere, it goes nowhere. But the fact that instead it was this seemingly bonkers list of things that are going to somehow magically fix him, when we know that's not going to happen. You just said, he has to go to anti-Semitism training. That's not even a thing. Either you are naturally, people can't become, people are who they are. They can figure out better ways to be aware of when they mess up. They can be more cognizant of not forcing those beliefs on people, but you're not just going to brainwash Kyrie in 5 to 7 games and put him back on the court. And I think a lot of people looked at this and said, this is borderline asinine what they're making him do. And I feel like, for the sake of our show, which is talking about basketball and getting Kyrie back or not back on the court, you really have to give some fault to the authority here for giving a list that almost sounded made up when it was first given. It's lengthy, it's weirdly specific, it's wildly trying to cover all aspects of this thing, when in reality, what we just need is some sort of education and some sort of apology, and then we can move on. At least that's the general attitude of the players, side of this, which it was not. It was just a bizarre list of specifics he had to do.
So let's continue with the Lakers. I'm done with that other topic. Anyone real quick, I want to add more to that? Okay.
I'm good.
On to the Lakers. God, what an organization.
My boys.
I feel like I called this.
He did. Yup.
So
I still wouldn't write him off, Tommy. Enjoy the moment, but I still wouldn't write him off.
No, I'm with you there. I still don't want to write him off, but I feel like I also called this.
So even though LeBron came to Kyrie's, not defense, but belief that he should come back and play, the Lakers are allegedly not interested in trading for Kyrie or Buddy Hield and Miles Turner. Not obviously, that would not be a
one trade. That would be very impressive. Bravo to Pelinka. But
and it's really funny because Miles Turner wants to be a Laker, and they're like, no.
They won't use names, but they're saying there are specific pieces they are looking for, and they haven't said who that is, but they have said who it isn't. They've said it isn't Buddy Hield, it isn't Miles Turner, it isn't Kyrie Irving. And it's interesting because you can look at this in one of two takes. You can look at it as same old Lakers. We know that this is how they like to do business. They are steadfast in their way, and that's why they win so many trades. That's why they took the Chris Paul trade so hard to the cleaners, the NBA had to step in originally and say, nope. That's why obviously Anthony Davis, his health ended up being a problem, but they looked like the winner of that trade when it initially happened. The Lakers have a way about them where they will wait out their opponent in a trade until they finally get what they want. So you could be looking at it that way. The other way to look at this is we have found the Lakers to be more successful this year when Westbrook is coming off the bench and Anthony Davis isn't even playing. So these are big names, but you're not looking for big talent back. You're looking, honestly, like for the Nets, a guy like Patty Mills fills the Westbrook role better than Kyrie does. You're looking for a floor general who can shoot, unlike Westbrook, back behind Patrick Beverley. So it's going to be interesting because this isn't necessarily about getting the right balance of talent back. This is about getting the right fit for the Lakers back. So whether it's about, whether you think it's about the Lakers holding out like they always do, or whether you think it's about trying to find that perfect fit, either way, Lakers fans, I'm sorry, it's the same conclusion either way. This is going to take a while to find a right partner. Buckle up, Lakerland. This one's going to be a while.
There's also rumors, though, that has come out recently and been denied that Anthony Davis might be on the trade block for the Lakers. I can see so it makes sense to me, right? He's still relatively young. I think he's just 29 or 30. Still has relative trade value, even though he does have an extensive injury history. But also, he has an extensive injury history, so it makes sense that the Lakers might want to move on from him.
Anthony Davis is 29 years old.
There we go. Him not being able to stay on the court has made LeBron have to play a lot more than he should be at his age of 38. They are not capable of trading LeBron because LeBron probably regretfully signed an extension this offseason. So they have to wait till Kevin, can you look up when he's allowed to be traded?
If I remember correctly, I'm going to look this up now, but I think I said in a previous episode that he couldn't be traded this entire year due to a salary clause extension.
There we go.
Let me see if I can find that.
So you're stuck with LeBron. And so, I mean, obviously LeBron would probably be, not that they will get close to value for LeBron at this point in his age, but if you're going to be, if you're trying to rebuild, you more want to trade the 38-year-old than the 29-year-old. But in this situation they're in, they wouldn't have a choice of the matter. They're apparently not going to do it.
As for LeBron James trade restriction, he cannot be traded until February 18, 2023, according to SpotRac.
Okay. So there you go. So right before the deadline.
Tommy, what do you got for us?
So, I mean, back to the Anthony Davis part of this. I mean, if you're a team that's in the market for a big that may be disgruntled with their situation, why would you even consider Anthony Davis, considering he's pretty much a street clothes player by injuries alone, you know, like, and he doesn't really play like other bigs. Like, he doesn't want to be the guy that really gets in and is like around the rim compared to other bigs. So, I mean, if you're in the market for someone, why would you even consider Anthony Davis with all the, how much he's fallen since that championship, you know?
Kev, I'm going to cut you off only because I have the direct answer there. Because, Tommy, I'm with you 100%. If you're going after Anthony Davis, you're pairing him. He's your four. He has to be. And so not that these teams make sense, but kind of like last year when we were saying if you're going after Ben Simmons, it's to make him not your point guard. Same idea. You're looking for a team like obviously the Jazz have no need with Laurie Markkanen in there, but having Walker Kessler as a rough and tumble five makes Anthony Davis, I'm going to stay out of your way for no problem. If Atlanta ever moved on from John Collins, there would be one. Anthony Davis can be the four because Okongwu or Capella can do the work inside. So you're limited to teams that have a true inside five. You're absolutely right, which aside from the limited fits, you also have the problem, to your point, Tommy, just to add the other side of the narrative, if you're the Lakers, you're calling up people and going, hey, I have a top 75 player here. I want to trade you. So when you look at how both sides are seeing it, he's almost impossible to trade because you have to find, you're starting with those as your opposite sides. Guy who can't go on the court, guy who is a top 75 player. How do you find, there's a wealth of middle there. How do you find the logical middle? So
There's one team that I know would be interested, but I can't see the Lakers doing a trade with this particular team.
I'm guessing you're thinking the Clippers?
The Celtics.
Because
the Celtics have their center, mm-hmm. who's not really a big. He's like, mm-hmm. but their center. They have their center in Robert Williams, right? I believe mm-hmm. that's his name. So they'd be happy with him. He's a younger version of Al Horford in a way.
Who at this point is about – Al Horford, like 10 years older, is about the same level of health as Anthony Davis. You're getting about as much effort from Horford as you're getting from Davis. It's actually not a bad idea.
So that'd be perfect for the Celtics. They would get, you know, a younger, essentially, version of Al Horford. And then the Lakers could probably get draft capital because of a team that can afford to get rid of picks mm-hmm. – the Celtics can. That team is built for the next 5-10 years of most likely playoff contention,
yeah.
if not NBA championship contention. So it would make sense in that manner. I just not sure if that organization could trade to a rival team.
We're also completely throwing out money in this scenario. If you're watching and going, how are they going to financially do that? I don't know. That's not our job. No, we're here to dream. Speaking of people who are going to crush my dreams right now, Kevin, what do you have for us?
As a footnote to the LeBron James trade eligibility, the NBA. So I did mention in the last segment that LeBron James cannot be traded until February 18, 2023. It should be noted that the NBA trade deadline for this season is February 9, 2023 at 3 p.m.
So not at all.
So he can't be traded before the trade deadline. So that means you got to wait till the offseason.
Why would they have it that way?
Why is that in his contract then?
I don't know. I don't know. Oh man, I'm still contract? Trying to look that up. But I just wanted to point that out in case anybody was.
Can he be waived and traded?
Because you mentioned he could be traded before the trade deadline. I wanted to make sure that was immediately shot down.
Okay, so they're keeping LeBron. Not that LeBron. It's not in LeBron's nature to want to leave whatever he starts anyway. So even if anyone could be traded at any time, I would be stunned if LeBron was ever a movable item, even 3 years down the road when he's, you know, playing for the Suns at age 42 or whatever. I doubt he'll ever want to move. But it's good to know that's not even an option.
All right. On to the next topic. Bucks got their first loss. Now they're up to 2 of the season to the Atlanta Hawks without Trae Young. And on top of it, no Bucks starter played 30 minutes in that game, which seems a little weird. They were getting blown out at points,
but they were ahead at halftime.
So it does seem weird to not have your starters play at least 30 minutes. I think Drew Holiday was as close as at 29 and whatever change or whatever.
Well, again, this is what we see at the start of the year, right? We see teams giving a little bit more leeway to their 9th, 10th, 11th man, trying to figure out what the rotation is going to look like. So that part doesn't really surprise me, especially because, like you said, towards the end of the game, it got out of hand. If it was a little bit closer, you know, it might have gone differently. To me, this isn't really a story. Milwaukee still hasn't gotten a minute yet out of Pat Connaughton this year. They played that game without Middleton. So the Trae Young side of it is not that special to me. Both sides were missing players. But the real story here is when Atlanta made that third quarter run, they got a ton of time out of their 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th man in that game. And those four guys combined shot 56% from the field, 40% from three. Amongst those four guys were A.J. Griffin, Okongwu, and Jalen Johnson. Their first-round picks from the last 3 years won them a game. Very sneakily, we talk a lot about the Murray, the Capella deals, but very sneakily, Atlanta has been one of the smartest organizations when it comes to drafting over the last 4 or 5 years. And I know there's been some changes in management and whatnot, so there's no one single name I can necessarily give credit to. But Atlanta's been really, really smart lately. And considering that those three guys I just mentioned, plus Trae Young, who was 4 years ago, all play different positions, this team probably has its starting five for the next decade already on its roster, as long as they're willing to pay everybody. So look out for the Hawks for quite some time here, because they've regardless of everything they've traded or free agency, you know, brought in, bravo on their drafting is really the story here.
Yep. They've definitely drafted very well. Also interesting talk about is this past week was election. Midterm elections across the country. And the NBA, to encourage fans to get out and vote, decided to have no games held on Tuesday, November 8th, which is interesting for a couple of reasons. One, I can't speak for the whole country, but my polls closed at 8. So it seemed odd that they couldn't be like evening games, you know, that started after 8. I understand you have the West Coast. I do understand that, but I don't know. I get it. They're trying to get people to go out and vote, and voting is very, very important.
Let's go around the horn here. Kev, what do you have? And then we'll go to Tommy, and then I'll jump in on this.
Some teams offered their facilities as voting places. I don't remember which teams offhand. So there was a little bit of – that. If they set up their court stadium to, like, do voting, they weren't going to be able to transform to be able to play a game the same night. So that you have that part. And possibly forgotten piece in crafting this up, the NBA decided to have everybody play the day before on Monday. So on Monday night, you had like all 30 teams in NBA in action, with the start time staggered by like 15 minutes or so. Like, so each game was like 9 o'clock, 9:15, 9:30, or something like that.
I honestly wouldn't be mad if during the football season, if they just did that every week, just nobody played on a Sunday and then all 30 teams played on Monday. Oh, I really wouldn't be mad if this was a regular thing. Tommy, what were you going to say?
So on the voting end of it, it makes sense because, I mean, especially in the past few years, you've been seeing a lot of situations in more highly populated areas where people are in line waiting to vote even after, you know, polls are technically closed, because there's been more of an encouragement for people to stay in line and put in their vote, and not just leave when the polls are officially closed, per se. And so you could have had a 10 o'clock game per se, but I feel like, because if you just look at any kind of social media, you see people saying, oh, there's people still in line at like 11 o'clock at night trying to get their vote in, you know? So, I mean, and on one hand, it's a really good move by the NBA, you know.
I'm all about this move. First of all, I think nationally, if we see one group, I'm of the belief that Election Day should just be a federal holiday. We should all be off. If we see one major organization doing this, huzzah! It's a step in the right direction towards that. I think Kevin, Tommy, you're both absolutely right. So I'm just going to add on top of that. For those of you who don't know, part of the reason we film when we are deciding when to film, Kevin gives us a rundown of when all of our favorite teams are playing, and we work around that. We're right now filming in between a Knicks game and a Niners game.
Okay, I will say this. I don't actually use that.
But Kevin does, and the point is, regardless of when teams are actually playing, Fanatics, which is who the NBA is appealing to, they're appealing to their fans, then build their day around it. So even if the games were played after the polls closed, you then have these super fans going, well, you know, my Timberwolves are playing at 9, but I need to go food shopping today. So I have to do that at 3 instead. So I need to move this meeting here. And there are actually people out there, a lot of people out there, who plan their day around when their team is playing. And so even if their team is not playing when the polls are open, they're going to then load up their day when the polls are open and do things that they would be doing later in the day that will prevent them from voting. So getting them off the calendar completely just clears the mind of the fanatic. Again, you just said you don't do that, which is why it's why it sounds far-fetched to you. Kilroy's side. But to the absolute fanatic, to all those Bucking Seahawk fans that woke up and started drinking at 9:15 this morning, you know what I'm talking about.
I will say this. You're not wrong that there are people who do that. I am fully aware of that. I just don't generally see that would be what is affecting or determining whether or not people are going to. I get it. I do understand it. It is a nice way to. I agree in the sense that it should be a holiday, and that we should be able to do this, especially seeing traditionally in a lot of poorer neighborhoods, the way the election it's set up to make it so that you can't vote. They'll make up whatever reasons and this and that. And I don't really want to get into the politics of that stuff. But ultimately, I don't think the NBA games are going to affect it. Because if a person is so, and maybe I'm just generalizing people too easily here. If you're so swayed that you're not going to go out and vote and be 10 minutes late to your game or whatever, obviously if you're there till 11 o'clock at night, that's a totally different story. But that you can't even just like take the time to go and vote when you know you should anyway.
Have you ever gone to a liquor store between 1:30 and 3:30?
No,
I don't. On a Sunday during the football season? First off,
you know that I don't because I don't drink.
Have you ever gone to a Super Bowl? Have you ever driven on the highway between 1:30 and 3:30 on a Sunday in New Jersey? This state shuts down when the Jets and Giants are playing.
I know, but I think it's...
If you put the Jets and Giants on at 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. on election day, nobody in this state would vote. Everyone would just stay home and watch sports. You're giving the common fanatic way too little credit here.
Give me too much credit. No, in my case, it's too much credit for them going out and voting. But
too little credit for their fandom. These are diehard fans who are prioritizing their team. And bravo, that's why we sell these. You know, that's why these things, these companies stay in business. Because we are allegiance.
But I just wanted to know that my reasoning is not because I don't want that I don't want people to go out and vote. I think people should go out and vote.
Oh, absolutely. Now, again, do I think this is in any way a large reason? No, but if we're just looking at is this helpful or hurtful, yeah, every little bit helps.
I understand that. But what people forget it. It doesn't matter. Just go out and vote. Stop making excuses for yourself and be like, oh, there's a game on. Or, oh, I want to watch Wheel of Fortune. Just go and vote. We should not be getting like 20% of the population voting, 30% or whatever these ridiculous numbers are. We should be hitting 100% all the time. This is all important. Just get up. Go vote.
If you don't obviously, vote, you don't get to complain about the results.
You're not able to. There are companies that make it so that you can't go out and vote. They won't let you. But just vote.
And dude, also, don't forget, there are like early options to vote now. If you can't vote on that Tuesday, I might not have been able to because I have to work on Tuesday. There were early voting options, and I had to do that this past Saturday. So
I think
there are early voting options. Please make sure you stay on top of that. And if you can't vote on that Tuesday for whatever reason, whatever the reason is, check out your early voting options and do that.
Now, here, speaking of early options, here's the one thing I will say. For me personally, you know, I went to my phone Tuesday morning. I went to set my fantasy basketball lineup. I went, whoa, there's no games. Why? Google. Oh, really cool what the NBA is doing. I love this. However, I feel like it could have been even more practical if literally for a week, weeks leading up, they kept reminding us on ESPN, remember, sports fans, next Tuesday, no games because it's election day. Get out there and vote. It didn't really – and again, I'm not watching every game across the network at every minute. I'm sure there were networks out there – I wish I could, but I'm sure there were networks out there doing that. But it wasn't – it should have been a universal effort by all NBA commentators to make it known, hey, there's going to be nothing going on Tuesday because we want you getting out there and voting. Yes, Kev.
I think the problem was that like it was only the NBA participating or voluntarily scheduling nobody playing on Tuesday. I mean, I'm fairly certain there was a hockey game, I think Islanders and Rangers that same night. So
well, hockey to me is a little bit different because you also have Canada in there.
It's definitely a cultural thing. The number of non-Americans you have in hockey and also in basketball, the number of athletes you have who are coming from areas that are traditionally seen as both big voter areas and also areas that have been lacking voter turnout, cities, to put it quite bluntly. So the NBA making this statement holds a little more water than, you know, hey, let's give, you know, 60% of our Canadian European league, you know, the night, if not more, I don't know what the number is, but give them the night off so that, you know, these handful of people can go vote. But same idea, Kevin, I'm with you. I would have just shut down sports for the night. You know, but again, there's no there's no higher being. There's no sports god who says turn off everything. Each, you know, commission can do what they want. But I'm with you, Kevin. I would have. I think it was ABC. There were no new episodes that night. I think we had a couple shows that ran reruns last week. Same idea, trying to encourage people. Hey, you got nothing else to do. You know, Election Day is special. Prioritize voting, like Corey is saying, is the ultimate message here. But yeah, I would love to see more and more people get in on this. Again, I would make it a federal holiday. I'd make it really, hey, do nothing but go vote today. But again, baby steps. And I think this is a small
federal, mandatory direction. You know, you have to go out. You have to let your employees out to go vote if they, you know,
right.
Something.
Non-lack of time there.
Right.
And the funny thing is, I'm going to applaud the NBA on this, because I know we've bashed the NBA a lot on other issues, but for this issue, I think we should applaud the NBA for scheduling everybody away from Tuesday. And there's a possibility, I think, that this could be repeated in the future by the NBA. I think there's a distinct possibility.
There's no reason for them not to continue this. There's no, it, and again, I am just clarifying here. I don't think it was negative. I think it was great that the NBA did this. I'm just maybe again, it's me being skeptical of that. It's going to make people go out and vote. Mm-hmm. That's my, where my skepticism comes from. I think that it is good that they did it though, because it gives people that option. However, I don't think, and again, people are easily swayed. I know I don't think similarly to other people on topics, but you shouldn't be easily swayed from not going to do something like voting, being like, oh, there's some hockey game on or basketball game or a new episode of CSI Walnuts and Dates.
I mean, remember, though, there are thousands of people out there who, when their friend tells them that they're getting married on a certain date, you know, someone's getting married on a Sunday afternoon, and the first question they ask the groom is, yo, the Giant game's going to be on at the bar, right? Like, that's the level of fanatic we have in this world. And again, I'm using fanatic not negatively. That's what fan is short for, right? We are fanatical about our sport.
No, I am aware.
And I love you guys. You guys are the reason people like us do shows like this. So trust me, I'm team fan here. But we all have to be honest with ourselves that sometimes we put our sports team before some major, major decision. And so taking out that distraction for a day, I mean – and what's the harm? So we all had to go watch The Bachelor for a night?
I'm not disagreeing. No, I'm not disagreeing that there's no harm. I'm not. I'm curious what the numbers are on how many more people voted.
I mean, I don't know if they were asking people as an exit poll question, were you going to watch the Wolves game tonight otherwise? I doubt that's one they thought to ask. But it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see if anyone ever comes out and says, if you are one of those people who voted, who felt more comfortable voting that day because you didn't have the stomach to watch.
When
that
you
night.
Say it that way, you see what I'm saying?
Right. But like, here, I'll give you an example. Forget that. I'm in a local community choir and we meet on Tuesday nights.
Right.
We meet after the Jersey polls close. But because I had choir that night, I had to run out at lunch. Because I didn't have the option of going after.
Now, if you told me your choir was decided, oh, we're not going to do it tonight because it's election, that makes sense to me because that is an activity that you're participating in a community,
right?
Versus you don't have to be in you can just. Whatever.
I'm saying there are Giant and Jet fans, and I'm using them as the most fanatical, but there are sports
fans out there who feel
more closely to their team than people feel about their coworkers or their teammates on a team they might be in, or people who might be in the in a choir or a band with other people.
This is so true.
And that's the team you're splitting up for the night. And I think you're just downplaying how attached to the team some of these people are.
I am.
Can we talk about Jordan Poole now?
No, we're talking about Emmanuel Quickly.
Oh, even better.
Okay.
The Jordan Poole of the East. There, I said it.
Isn't that RJ Barrett?
It might be by the time all said and done, to be honest. Anyway, what do you got for about Emmanuel Quickly?
So, boy, this is funny. So, for those of you who are paying attention at all to our preseason shows, we had hopes and dreams that Donovan Mitchell was going to be a New York Knicks this offseason, and it really was culminating to that point where it was going to happen. But apparently one of the sticking points was the Knicks didn't want to trade Emmanuel quickly.
Whoops.
And boy, guess what might be happening? The Knicks are they're getting calls.
Which we don't know. They might just be hanging up. We have no idea
about Emmanuel quickly. If they trade him, God, you can't do it now.
You're almost now stuck with Barrett and Quickley until their contracts expire. You almost accidentally made those two humans untradeable. There's definitely a you made your bed now lie in it feeling here, because if you don't get at least a Donovan Mitchell level talent back, you've clearly admitted a mistake. And generally speaking, the Knicks are way too proud is not stubborn's the right word. They're way too stubborn of a franchise to ever either cut their losses or hedge their bets. So I would guess Quickley now retires a Knick unless he leaves in free agency of his own accord.
And then on top of it, the Knicks are still thinking that their draft picks are going to get them a disgruntled player.
Anyone can get disgruntled at any time.
I don't
dislike that, but it's probably time to stop making that plan A. I think we can agree on that.
Why is that plan A?
Probably time to just the idea that someone's bound to get angry is the feather in the cap. No one's happy forever. That's your hope? Your hope is just someone in the league gets angry? That's not a good strategy.
Half those 11 picks is this draft.
Right. Someone gets angry and they get angry in a hurry. Sorry, I have to clarify that.
I do think it's like three picks are this draft.
Two of which are probably not going to come to fruition unless
Washington. So that makes it even worse.
Yeah. Yeah. You'd be trading away literally empty holes in the draft.
God, I hate this Knicks. I want to be happy because there's things that they should be happy about. I like the Jalen Brunson signing. I like that the Knicks finally gave an extension to a player of their team that they drafted.
Set that bar nice and low, Kilroy. I like it.
But for the love of God, you don't need 11 first round draft picks with 84 different types of
protections.
That's not the word.
I also need to clarify this. You need to stop believing that your fandom is stupid enough to believe that it's 11 picks. It's not. Half of these picks are not going to come to fruition because they're things like the Pistons' top 20 protected pick. We know the Pistons are not going to the Eastern semifinals anytime soon. That pick is a waste. We know that. One of these picks on the second round is
which
like top
56 protected. Which means we literally gave away a first-round pick for nothing.
Probably.
Get rid of Kemba Walker.
That's not nothing.
That isn't nothing because his contract is up at the end of the year.
I couldn't stand his face anymore. That's a whole lot of something.
Just cut him. His contract goes away at the end of the year.
Stubborn. If the pride isn't foolish, it's not New York pride, baby. Let's go.
God, it comes before the fall.
Always. Call it summer.
But they've been falling for 20 years.
Baby. Longer.
99 just seems like a long time ago, doesn't it?
23 years and counting. Let's
talk about Jordan Poole.
Yeah, let's talk about another disappointing person. Is Jordan Poole
worth it? I hope that's the end of the question.
No. Is Jordan Poole worth it? Yeah, sure. Why not?
Of course,
you take it away. I have no interest.
As I tend to do, I'm going to answer this question by not answering the question. I know Tommy wants to get in on this. Because he feels there are some underrated Spurs.
We're not going to talk about those Spurs. The moment you talk about them, I'm muting you.
So, Tommy, tread lightly here. But, Tommy, let's start with you.
I'm kidding.
No. Go ahead. Okay, mute me. All right. I think Jordan Poole, they wasted money on Jordan Poole. As soon as he got that contract, he took a dip. And you just compare him to other players on other teams that aren't getting the respect that Jordan Poole is getting right now, it kind of frustrates me. And I know you're sitting there wagging your finger like, oh no, Tommy's going to talk about a Spur.
No, that's not what I'm going to say. I'm going to stop you real quick. Okay. Remember this. Spurs are a bad team. Someone has to score points. Just remember that. Someone has to score the points.
All right, well then you're taking quite a bit of credit away from some players that are playing the best game of their lives.
Doesn't matter. The team is bad. Someone has to be scoring points.
I will say, though.
Not a bad team.
The team is bad, but the organization is good. I don't think we'll be having this conversation about, no matter what Devin Vassell's stats, no matter what Keldon Johnson's stats end up looking like over the next couple years, they're here partly because the Warriors have always been kind of flashy with these contracts to keep their own. Whereas a team like the Spurs, there's really never going to be a conversation of did they overpay, because they don't overpay. It's just in their nature. So there is definitely a little bit of an apples and oranges here. But I'm with Tommy in the sense that this idea that money has to naturally translate to ability, when you know when you're drafted by the Warriors, they're going to tend to overpay you a bit to keep you. Not that it's Jordan Poole's fault by any means, but Jordan Poole is definitely doing nothing to instill confidence here.
No, I mean, it definitely looks like a bad contract right now. Obviously, it's still early in the season. It's what, how many games in?
12, I think, for them.
Okay, I was going to say half a dozen. So a dozen games in. I don't know why I would say half a dozen. Anyway, a dozen games in or so. It's not even 20 games, right? It could just be contract jitters. Mm-hmm. He got a huge contract. He knows he has to live up to this, and he's struggling right now. He needs to find his groove. Players get in slumps. Mm-hmm. They need to get out of it. The best way to do that is to calm yourself down. It also doesn't help that he had that whole drama with Draymond Green this offseason.
That does not help. Very key. You're absolutely right.
So to come out and say that this is a bad contract would be unfair to Jordan Poole. It's not even a full season yet. It's not even half a season yet.
And that's the key to this. It's a 4-year deal. And after 2 years is when a 34-year-old-ish Draymond Green and a 34-year-ish-old Klay Thompson can either come off the books or will be given a new contract with much less expectation on those two humans. So Jordan Poole was really signed more for what he's going to be expected to do in the third and fourth year of this contract. If Jordan Poole is playing like a seventh, eighth man right now, knowing that we're very close, or we should be close to seeing Jonathan Kuminga, Moses Moody be able to step up and be close to as good as him, that's okay. Jordan Poole doesn't have to play like a 1B yet, like the contract would hopefully lead him towards being. If, though, in that third and fourth year is really where you're going to look back and say, was that a wasted contract or not? Because how he does when he's supposed to be more of a carrier of this team will be after Klay and Draymond's current contracts expire.
And I will also say minutes is an issue too, right? Mm-hmm. Like there are the Warriors do have a lot of talent. Minutes will at some point or other be an issue. He is shooting poorly this year for him from the field. I expect those numbers to bounce back. He may not put up the 18 points he had last year or whatever he was putting up, but I do expect his shooting numbers to improve closer to his career average.
And there's definitely got to be something, Gary Payton II was making everyone's life easier on defense last year, which in turn made the offense just move faster because they weren't as exhausted. There's got to be something to be said for the fact that
might be the big reason this team is struggling.
Trying harder on defense, because everyone has to basically move up a man. So if Jordan Poole was guarding the fourth best player on the team last year, he's now guarding the third best. Everyone has to go up one. So we'll see if it takes them some time to adjust there as well.
Anything else?
I will say one last thing about my Spurs. I encourage you to watch a few games, see how they play, and then tell me they're a bad team.
They're a bad team.
I'll leave it at that.
I'll tell it to your face. They're a bad team.
Can I drop one shameless plug here before we end the day?
Sure.
All right. So first of all, I want to talk about the Jazz because Tommy touched on this. We were doing our research as we were talking this week. I just want to remind everybody, the Jazz were 10-3 before they lost their game, their last game, with a couple quality wins. They beat the Grizzlies. They beat the Celtics. This is exactly where the Washington Wizards were last year. They were 10-3. They had beaten the Grizzlies. They had actually beaten the Celtics twice. I think they had beaten the Hawks. They had some quality wins in their first 13. They ended up taking Johnny Davis, I think about 12th. They ended up in the lottery.
They did have injury issues.
They did. But the point is 10-3 in the grand scheme of things really means nothing. It means it more often than not is a great start, and you should be proud if you're a Jazz fan. But if you're sitting there going, oh, you know, just only because you said, you know, Tommy, you did the right thing. You said, if this continues, I'll take them out of the tank talk. But if you're sitting there going 10-3, they're a lock, put them in. I'm just telling you, you only have to look back 1 year, go back one fiscal year and go, oh, yeah, 10-3 doesn't mean anything. With that being said, to what you said, Wes Unseld Jr. there needs to be real careful. He's got Washington looking good again this year. If they fade again and they become the new Charlotte Hornets, where they just can never put together a second half, he's a young new coach. He can't afford to get, you know, to get a narrative built around him. Oh, he's the guy who can't finish the season. He's got to be real careful to either not get too hot in December, or, you know, maintain this about 500 through the season, or he could be in trouble. Kevin, what do you got?
We had a question from earlier in the episode about NBA draft order. I do have some answers to that. All teams missing the playoffs are in the lottery. Teams with the worst records get more chances at winning a top four pick. More ping pong ball combos. It's the first four overall picks are awarded by the drawing of the ping pong balls. The remaining lottery teams are sorted by record to fill out picks 5-14.
And it's the four worst teams that all have the same odds, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So yeah, that's what we were saying. You want to fall in the bottom four to have the best chance of being the number one.
That's right. You don't necessarily have to be the number one. You just want to be in the bottom four to have the
bottom four
biggest chance of landing the one pick.
Gotcha.
All right. Thank you all so much.
I need to go one more here. One last shout out. It's November 13th. We just watched arguably the NFL game of the year, Bills Vikings. I got the NBA game of the year this week, and it happens twice. We get it back to back this week. We got Denver versus Dallas. If you're asking why is that the game of the week, because it's DeAndre Jordan versus JaVale McGee. The picks are going to be questionable at best. The free throws are going to be missed like crazy. The charges are going to be mediocre at best. These are two of my favorite centers to watch be mediocre, and we get to watch them play each other twice in a row. Denver, Dallas this week. Let's go!
Which days for our audience?
Remember, like, share, subscribe, ring that notification bell. Comment down below which of those centers is your favorite of the two. For those of you who listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you can get your podcasts, remember, come over, check us out on YouTube, and comment down below which of those two centers is your favorite. We'll catch you guys next time.
Team DeAndre!
Twitter was fun this past week.
Dwight Howard signed with the Taiwan team.
Yeah, he was on that list, but we didn't talk about him. Sorry, Dwight.
Also, we love you, Dwight.
Maybe if he made the top 75.
Ooh!
Nah, I'm kidding. I love you.